Welcome to the Cricket Podcast. This is your host, Mr. Number 9.
And this is The Full.
Okay, so this is possibly our final podcast. This is before we preview the finals. Let's look back a little bit. We have had some very good... what would you say was your favourite match of the tournament so far?
I'm tossing up between the two games that we've watched. I actually think the New Zealand-Australia pool match was ridiculous in its ridiculousness.
It was.
The fact that... And the semi-final sort of proved that the scores that both teams got were stupidly low and that pitch was not as bad. Had no demons in it, and the batters just sort of, for some reason, or the bowlers just had an outstanding day. And from that, that one sticks in my mind a bit more because of its...
I think India-Zimbabwe proved that that pitch had nothing wrong with it. Zimbabwe scored 290 quite easily, without batting their full overs, might I add.
Yeah.
Zimbabwe should have scored 300. In India, in retrospect, seemed quite lucky to get away with that one. And Eden Park had nothing wrong with it. I think, as always, and it's been like this in my lifetime, a par score in Eden Park is about 280, 290. It's a defendable score.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking as well. Going to the semi-final, I was talking with some workmates as well, and they were thinking 300 plus would be needed. And I was thinking 280, 270, it would be very low, but it's defendable. It's one of those things that you'd have to bowl well to do it, but you could do it. So anything above that... It's say a par score. It's about 280, 290. 300's good. Anything more, you...
Okay. Now, obviously, you've only been to the two games, and I've been to a few. What would you say is your favorite cricket watching experience? Either from at home or...
For actual being in the crowd, I think the semi-final, definitely. Was just... Especially... The six to win it. I think that was the great thing about both games at Eden Park that I went to.
The roof was absolutely risen.
Yeah, in the game, you win a nail-biting game with a six, basically, effectively on both ones at the end of the game.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And so, yeah, that sort of experience where everybody just, the six sort of drives everybody more because it's this clean shot, both of them driven straight into our south stand that we're at. And yeah,
that was
just
beautiful.
The craziness of the crowd and how everybody just went insane.
I agree. Well, one of the highlights for me was getting to visit all these really cool grounds all over New Zealand and Australia. My first ever live cricket game in Australia, which was not at the MCG or the SCG or even the Gabba or the Wacca, but Canberra, who even knew they had an international cricket ground. But it grew on me as time progressed. It's a lovely little ground. I mean, it's not that many people for capacity, but it holds the Big Bash finals because it always sells out. It's got about 20,000, but it's got a big playing ground, like very big boundaries. It's a great little place to watch cricket, and Canberra is a great little town, I think. But the highlight for me watching live was at Nelson. Sexton Park is an absolute peach. I truly hope that New Zealand cricket play more one-day international games there. And if they do in the future, even when we have like just normal bilateral series games, I can see myself wanting to go to Nelson to watch games there. And without a shadow of a doubt, had the best food in any of the venues I visited.
That's quite impressive for a stadium, really.
Best variety, best quality, nicest customer service from the people there. So pretty much all rates, best food.
So what you're saying is that stadiums can actually provide good food and
service. Absolutely.
Having really only been to Eden Park as a stadium, it's a shock and surprise to me.
I don't want to diss Eden Park. I know it's like our favorite pastime, but Eden Park has got lots of great things about it. But that being said, that's the worst food of all the stadiums I went to. Even like Hamilton had better food, I think. Wellington had very good food. It just didn't have the variety that you got in Nelson. But Caketon's a wonderful stadium. I cannot say enough nice things about it.
The Caketon, which we've been to for the football World Cup qualifiers, is very good. It's very easy to get into, and that's wonderful for a stadium. But just the ease of getting around it, and say not to take away from Eden Park, because Eden Park, especially after the upgrades, has been quite good. And I was actually surprised on Tuesday how quick and simple it was to get into the ground, given that it was a semi-final and how many people were making it. And it was, the security guards and the bag checkers were doing their job, but they were doing it very
very efficiently.
Yeah.
Hopefully they don't lose their standards after the World Cup, and Eden Park will continue to be as good a place to visit as it has been so far.
But taking
nothing away from Eden Park. Great experience. Food could be slightly better, I think, and slightly more variety, but watching experience at Eden Park is wonderful.
It's great.
And it's got everything you need, like just places to walk outside the park and outside the stadium when it's the change of overs, and if it's raining, there's nice shelter areas, which you don't get when you're in a cricket oval like Hamilton or Nelson.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like the train station's right there, which is quite convenient. But those are the highlights for me. Let's go into individual performances. What to you was the best cricketing performance in the World Cup that you've watched?
Either Martin Gapdal with his 200 and billion. was, I mean, 237 not out, it's a decent score, and that was a very fine performance. And it wasn't slogging. That was the most wonderful thing about it, is that it was all cricketing shots. There was not some awful hook over cow corner or anything like that. He did, you know, if it was a bad ball that required pulling, he pulled. You know, if it was a full ball that could be driven, he drove. You know, cuts all around the ground, really. He was hitting it with classical cricket shots, and he showed that you can build a massive total by playing proper cricket shots, which was awesome. And I suppose the other one, really, well, the other two, which would be, once again, back to the games we went, was Kane Williamson versus Australia, who held that innings together when everything was falling apart, and Grant Elliott in the semi-final. Because he built that quite well as well, because that wasn't really, the chase wasn't really falling apart when he came in, but they were starting to get a bit of wobbles. It needed steadying, and he steadied it and continued to get runs. And then when he needed to accelerate, and us in the crowd were all saying, oh, they need to go now, they need to start hitting. And him and Corey Anderson out there, and they timed it well.
I think he did actually admit after the game that he probably left it a bit late, and they were quite fortunate. But it, all's well that ends well, right?
I think they went at about the time we thought they were, and Anderson. It was Anderson that started to go, and Elliott was going to play the support role. And then Anderson got out in a little bit of a, well, not really bizarre fashion, but there was that little moment afterwards of...
Imagine if it had hit the spider cam. You would have just been like South Africa. How unlucky are you?
Yeah, that would have been unlucky for South Africa. That would have been... That would have made it like, okay, even pure lady luck is against you, South Africa.
Yeah,
they do not want you to make it. Nobody wants to make you, let you get to
I know,
final.
Right?
Yeah.
But the I have to say, we all... focused on batsmen, and like Martin Guptill's inning, I don't think I'll ever forget. I got to watch it live. Even my wife at one point was like, is it really that easy? And I was like, yeah, it is for him.
Yeah, for him. It was that easy. For anybody else, not so much.
He was literally like hitting boundaries at will.
Yeah.
He was like, not to take anything away from his performance. The Windies did not, was not bowling their best at that point, and they didn't feel their best, but well, it's your day. When the sun's shining, you got to make hay, and he definitely did.
Oh, definitely.
After that, I think even though it was from the other side, Mitchell Starc's performance in that game was beautiful. Like that was a comeback that should not have happened.
No.
I think he's very unlucky that Michael Clarke took him off when Michael Clarke did, or else I think Mitchell Starc would be celebrating having taken Australia to top of their group with that performance. Very unlucky not to get seven, I think, if he did get that. He would have possibly had another over to bowl at Trent Bolt or Tailenders.
As you say, he had an over the spear when Williamson won the game. And as we said at the time, why Clark? Why give him one?
Why did he have an over to spear?
What was he saving him for?
Exactly. That I could not understand. The AB de Villiers scoring 160-odd against the Windies. That's an innings that we're not going to forget in a long time either. But I wasn't there live. The Mashrafi Murtaza in that game against England, both his captaincy as well as bowling pretty much on one leg, getting those key breakthrough wickets when he did. Rubil Hussain got the four wickets that got won us the game, but Murtaza, I think, got those key moments.
Yeah.
Those quality wickets that you need. It's like the like Corey Anderson and Trent Bolt. Trent Bolt does the job, gets the wickets when ends have opened up, and he's professional. He will just get those wickets. But Corey Anderson, through the tournament, while he has been hit for a few, has been getting important wickets, I think.
He's really been the
Golden arm bowler.
the partnership breaker. There's a partnership building. It's between decent batsmen. If they stay in, it's going to cause trouble. And Corey Anderson,
And often in
comes
his
on.
first over as well, would get those key partnership breaking wickets. So he is important. He's had an overall really good tournament, I think, Corey Anderson anyway. And of course there was the big show, Glenn Maxwell's 50 ball century, which of course nobody's gonna, and let's not forget Chris Gayle's double century.
Oh, yes,
very,
just, yeah,
some very fine performances, even if I did not see them at the stadium. They were definitely very good performances. Even when I was watching the India Zimbabwe game, Brendan Taylor's last match for Zimbabwe, scoring a very fine century, 130 runs, very good innings. If he had stayed a bit longer, they would have possibly got 350 plus and won that game against India, which would have been a fantastic way for him to retire. I hope it's only 3 years, which he takes his Kolpak contract with Zimbabwe, because international cricket needs players like him. We don't have so many good players spread amongst all the teams that we can afford to lose good players like this to any form of other cricket, county or IPL or anything like that. We need to keep watching good players play. And well, I don't begrudge him a single bit. He's been a great servant to Zimbabwean cricket, and he needs to look after himself and his family, and by all means, and best of luck to him.